Welcome to the Health Changers podcast, presented by Cambia Health Solutions, where we share real stories of healthcare transformation from those experiencing it and those helping to make healthcare more personalized. I'm your host, Rachel. We just wrapped up our third season of Health Changers, and when we examined which episodes people listened to the most, we found a common theme: health and the good of the community. The top three fan favorites delved into chronic and systemic issues in healthcare and innovative efforts to tackle those issues. The first of the top three explored the opioid epidemic. Every day in the United States, more than 130 people die from an opioid overdose. In fact, the crisis is so great that today, more people in the U.S. die from overdoses than car accidents. In this excerpt, host Susan Gage talks with Dr. Jim Polo, the Behavioral Health Director for Regents Health Plans, and Phil Caruso from Walgreens about how we got to this point of crisis with opioids. They also look at ways of dealing with the leftover medications that often lead to overdoses.
The opioid crisis is actually the unintended consequence of trying to address pain. In the 1990s, the medical profession focused heavily on addressing the complaint of pain. Pain for many years has been the number one thing that people will go to see their doctors for, whether it's in a primary care clinic or to the emergency room. So in the 1990s, we focused on trying to really alleviate pain and address pain. We even developed in the industry what's called the fifth vital sign, which was asking people about pain. So the pharmaceutical industry responded by developing many new medications to address pain, largely the opioid class of medications. And these are things like Vicodin, Percocet, Dilaudid, common medications that most of us know about. And then at the same time, the insurance industry responded by making it easy for folks to be able to get these medications through their health plan. So nobody was one fault, but what ended up happening is we had high level of prescription of opiates, easy access, inexpensive access, and we also created a generation or two of folks that have an expectation that all pain should be treatable and that living pain-free, regardless of the reason of getting pain or having pain or what caused it. And the result is, by 2015, we had enough opiate prescriptions that were being issued on a daily basis where you could medicate every single American 24/7 for 3 weeks. So, you know, we ended up with a huge crisis. And unfortunately, opiates are highly addictive, which can lead to all kinds of medical problems at the same time that it doesn't really, in the long run, it really hasn't helped us really address the underlying pain problem. So that's kind of how we got here to the current crisis.
So as the health plan and others have done a lot to lean into helping to resolve this crisis, and one of the things that Regents has done was in 2018, began a partnership with Walgreens to sponsor safe medication disposal kiosks in Walgreens stores in Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and Utah. Can you both talk about the Walgreens program and how the partnership works to reduce opioid misuse in our communities?
You have all these medications that were being dispensed and, you know, when taken properly, treat very good and legitimate medical uses. And one of the things we've always noticed as a pharmacy, and we get this all the time from patients, is what do I do with medications that are sitting in my medicine cabinet that I'm no longer taking, or they are expired, or I do not want them anymore. And up until we started this program with our kiosks, we really didn't have a great answer. There have been kind of twice annual prescription drug take back days, which are great programs that allow folks to clean out their medicine cabinet and bring them to facilities that collect them. One of the drawbacks is they happen twice a year and they're usually on a Saturday and people are busy. So Walgreens had this idea to install a permanent safe medication disposal kiosk in our stores, in our pharmacies throughout the country. And we've been working with several partners, including Regents, to do so. And these kiosks are a great opportunity to dispose of unwanted opioids and other prescription drugs and controlled substances, including over-the-counter medications like PET medications or liquids, at no cost to the customer, and it's available every day.
So when we first heard about the Walgreens program, we were very excited. We've put a lot of effort into decreasing numbers of prescriptions that are being given to our members for opiates. It doesn't change the fact, though, that people have had these medications storing up in their medicine cabinets, as Phil mentioned. And I'll highlight that the take-back program is for all medications. It's not just for opiates. But obviously, the opiates pose a significant danger because they're higher risk for addiction, they're higher risk for misuse. And medications that are sometimes available in a cabinet can be also misused by either adolescents or friends that are already having difficulties. And so we were excited because this gave us an opportunity to go the next step further, which is how do we get these medications out of circulation? How do we get them disposed of in a way that is safe and helpful to folks that are wanting to get rid of them?
The second of our Health Changers fan favorites explores how good health is good business. The business in this case is one you probably wouldn't associate with healthcare: Walmart. The company is working to make healthcare more accessible and affordable. Cambia CEO Mark Gann sat down with Walmart's Vice President of Health and Wellness Transformation, Marcus Osborne, to get his take on how to make healthcare more consumer-centric.
Healthcare is the number one concern on the minds of Americans. It's not jobs or the economy or fear of terrorism, or if you believed all this, you know, everything that's in the press, it's not immigration. You know, some of those things are second or third. Number one is healthcare. And frankly, it has been for decades. It's been one of the top concerns, if not the concern. It is consistently there. And you say, well, what is it that is really making consumers angry about the American healthcare system? It's five things. And number one, two, and three, in rank order, in terms of what sort of causes the greatest angst, will sound very similar. Number one, two, and three are cost of medical care, cost of pharmaceutical care, cost of health insurance. Why is healthcare so damn expensive? So four and five are a little bit of a departure, but they're also going to resonate. Four is this: why is healthcare so inconvenient? Why can't I get what I want, when I want it, how I want it? Why is it I have to travel so far? Why is it I have to wait in a waiting room for 45 minutes? Why is it so wildly inconvenient for me? Why is it that, you know, I can, it's only the things that I need, I can only consume when I'm actually having to work? And then the last, which you'll think is similar to convenience, but is actually a very different point, is access. Why is healthcare so inaccessible? And it doesn't mean from a convenience perspective. What is actually meant here is, why is it so complex? Why does it feel like when doctors talk to me, they might as well be speaking in Mandarin? Why is it when my health insurer talks to me and sends me stuff in mail, I have no idea what they're sending me? It feels intentionally more complex than it needs to be. And so these are the realities from a consumer perspective. And so if you want to understand what drives Walmart's focus on healthcare, why we think we have a right to play and are playing, it's that this underlying anger and angst that we see coming from consumers.
What would be, give us your best in terms of what you think would be the most important piece of advice you would give a company like us, based on your experience, not just from Walmart, but just in general around healthcare? What would you say?
Yeah, I would say probably the biggest I would give you is, to, as you think about how you engage with your members and the individuals that you serve, I sort of have challenged people to say, they're based on what you know, you're running your business, and when you identify these moments in which you feel like you need to kind of engage with a member around something, you know, you're wanting them to do something, and typically you're wanting them to do something really for you. Now you think that you are getting you wanting them to do something that's actually beneficial for them. But let's remember, if you feel compelled to reach out to somebody, the real reason you're reaching out to them is there's something you want them to do for you, regardless of how you sort of deluded yourself into believing that you're trying to kind of do something. What we sort of challenged is, and we don't always get it right, but actually don't, there, even if there's something you want to do for somebody, don't start there. That when you actually look for opportunities to drive outreach where all you're asking is, what can I do for you? How can I better serve you? Some of this we've attempted to institutionalize even in our own customer service, which is you're only asking like, what is it you need? What can I help you with today? Is there anything like starting there? Because that when you and if when they sort of tell you something, then as best you can go do that. When you then call, because there's something you want them to do, they're going to be more likely to do it. And so I think for us, what I would say is it gets sort of bandied about, but I just don't think. I mean, that would indicate, and we sort of see this as consumers, we just don't trust the system. I mean, we will say things, yeah, I trust my doctor, but not really. Like, there's not really kind of deep trust. Trust is, I trust that this doctor went to college, graduated from medical school, and isn't a complete idiot. That's what I trust. But I don't actually really trust him in the way that I trust my mother. So that's my challenge, is look for any opportunity to build that trust by having people tell you, what is it you want me to do for you? And then as much as you can, do that for them.
In the final of our fan favorite episodes from season 3, the talk turns to healthy food and healthy communities. 45 million people in the United States live with food insecurity. That is one in every 8 households, making it a national epidemic. One way to address this situation is to create more access to healthy foods and encourage people to choose healthy foods. To discuss how this is happening on the ground, Angela Dowling, the president of Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon, sat down with Susanna Morgan, the CEO of the Oregon Food Bank. Here's an excerpt from their conversation.
There was something I've learned recently is that with food deserts that exist, and I think many of us know what that is in terms of not having access to nutritional food, non-processed food, that a lot of individuals actually don't know how to cook in that environment. So if you give them fresh produce or you give them access to vegetables that maybe they haven't seen before or haven't had access to, they don't know how to prepare that food. What is it that the Oregon Food Bank is doing in that space?
Yeah. So our theory of change around how do you get healthy food into lower income folks is kind of 3 nested circles. The outside circle is first, you need access to it. You have to be able to find it and afford it. And of course, we can create access to those healthy foods through our produce distributions. The second circle is that you have to choose it. So if there are apples and rutabagas at the food pantry, you have to take apples and rutabagas home. Mm-hmm. And then the third piece is that you have to eat it. It has to go from your counter into your belly. We can affect the access to it through our produce distribution. We can affect the choosing of it through in a couple of different ways. One, we can do it through an intensive education program. We have a Cooking Matters program, which is 6 weeks cooking education, nutrition education, grocery shopping on a budget program for folks who need deeper skill building and would really like to build a community around their skills in food. But then there are also little interventions. We find that if we can create opportunities for people to share ideas among themselves, among people who are needing food assistance, that we often don't have to intervene ourselves. So putting out recipe cards is an idea, but an even better idea is having the Russian grandmother who knows what to do with rutabagas talk to the rest of the Russian community about her recipes for rutabagas that also work within her culture. And so creating the spaces and opportunities, identifying the people who have those skills and lifting them up as peer mentors, peer teachers, has been a wonderful way. And then I think another thing is just assumptions. We would assume that rutabagas are hard to use because in the WASP middle-class culture that I grew up in, rutabagas weren't common. But that is not true for all cultures. So to just sort of pull away your own assumptions and go, wait, is this actually a challenge? And if it is, we should create some solutions around it. But let's not pretend it's a challenge. Let's actually know that it is. I have a great parsnip story, actually. A couple years ago, we got in 18 truckloads of parsnips. 18 truckloads. And we started pushing our parsnips out through our system, and we put in recipe cards. cars and we put in cooking demonstrations, and it was still really hard to finally get all of those parsnips out before they went bad. And we got it done and we thought, oh, okay, we're never going to do that again. And then the year rolled around to about the same time the parsnips came in, and we started getting phone calls. Where are the parsnips? Where are the parsnips? People had learned how to use parsnips and they were really excited about getting parsnips, right? Right. So I think about me, I'm a cook, I like to cook, and getting a CSA box and it has a sunchoke or a kohlrabi or something that I'm not familiar with. Well, once you get a recipe that you know that you like, now you know what to do with sunchoke and kohlrabi. Once you get a recipe that you like about parsnips, now you know what to do with it. So sort of this high initial barrier and then very easy thereafterwards.
Thanks for helping us mark our third season here at Health Changers. If you'd like to listen to full episodes of our fan favorites or find other episodes, visit cambiahealth.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at Cambia, C-A-M-B-I-A. You can now find Health Changers on all of your favorite podcast platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. Just search for Health Changers when you're there. Please subscribe and leave a review. Thanks for listening. Thank you.